Welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, brought to you by the South Florida chapter of the International Coaching Federation, where our goal is to engage, motivate, and inspire. On the Coach's Corner, we speak with the great professional coaches of ICF South Florida. We hear about what compels them to coach. We talk about the people they support and the tools and techniques that they use to get the job done. Coaching is a hugely specialized craft, and this inside look at the power and the promise of coaching is both an exploration and a celebration of our member coaches, their talents, and their client successes. Hello, I'm Eric Gorris, a member of the ICF South Florida Programming Committee and host of the Coach's Corner podcast. If you're a coach, I'd like to invite you to visit the ICF South Florida website so you can learn more about our chapter's benefits and program offerings. To learn more, go to icfsouthflorida.org. Check out our calendar of events, and if you find an event that interests you, register for free as our guest. Just use the promo code podcast. In today's episode, we're talking with Annette Goodman, who helps clients make the most of themselves and their careers. Annette works with clients of all ages, but specializes in working with those in the earlier stages of their careers, the 20 and 30 somethings, feeling that the sooner that someone enters into the coaching process, the more the coaching can help. We also get into neuroplasticity, the stories we tell ourselves, and the options we have to rewire the way we think, and how a two-minute acknowledgement of how the brain works can bring about change almost immediately. Join us as we endeavor to feel differently, think differently, and hopefully do differently with our guest, Coach Annette Goodman. Annette, nice to have you here. Hey, Annette, let me ask you, this is something that our listeners are usually so curious about. Can you tell us how you became a coach or what your path to coaching was?
Yeah, absolutely. So way back when I did my first master's in industrial and organizational psychology, always being super curious and interested in what motivates people, what motivates teams, you know, how to create a positive culture in the workplace. And so I started there, you know, a couple of decades ago, working internally inside organizations, always thinking about, especially when, you know, culture change certainly happens quite frequently, given that, you know, dynamic workplace, thinking about what will make the transition easiest for our employees, what will motivate them to stay sort of at the company and work within the confines of the changes that, you know, periodically sort of arise over time. And what became really important to me is to think about teamwork and then also individual sort of leadership, where I wanted to see if I could work with young adults who are coming in, first-time professionals, and how to mentor them and coach them into leadership roles and into promotions and leadership roles. And I always found that incredibly satisfying and fulfilling. So doing that in a variety of roles, I worked both nonprofit, for-profit, a lot of different organizations, leadership positions. And I realized that that was more rewarding to me than all of the other work that I was doing in operations or, you know, I wore a lot of different hats because I love the variety, but I always came back to this is where I felt gratified and satisfied. And so most recently, when I decided to leave the sort of full-time corporate workplace, I was in a, you know, 20,000 person hospital most recently, and I thought about what I'm most passionate about and it was easy to say, okay, now I want to do coaching externally and do that full time, just given, you know, my passion and love for it. And also tapping into a lot of different work that I've done over the years, writing curriculum. I had written social emotional learning curriculum for public school kids. I'd written curriculum on emotional intelligence for the International Society of Emotional Intelligence, facilitated workshops. And so it just seemed like this would tap into all of what I really enjoyed and all of the past experiences that I've had.
So it's kind of like almost trimming out all the other stuff and just letting the good stuff remain.
Yeah, the stuff that I love. And the way I think about it is, you know, all the stuff that I'm now trimming out is super valuable to me when I work with adults, your young adults in the workplace, just having had all that experience in the business world and both nonprofit and for-profit, you know, I think helps me understand when they come in and sort of explain maybe a problem or a political situation at work. I've probably experienced something like it. And so it can sort of speak to that. I'm finding that incredibly useful.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. And I, you know, it brings up the question in my mind, you know, I think it says you're 25 years you did in sort of profit and nonprofit large organizations, developing teams, right? And developing talent within the organizations. Is that what it was?
Yeah, absolutely. In addition, of course, to culture change and all of that, but yes, developing teams and talent, absolutely.
Oh, so teams, that's very interesting. So would you do group work or would you do individual work?
I did both. I did a lot of group work, which was fantastically fun. For instance, I developed and then facilitated communication workshops and did that in groups. So we would take perhaps an email where somebody would send out an email internally and realize they didn't get the response that they wanted and would bring it to the table. It was super, you know, open, comfortable, you know, workplace where people build trust over time. And so they would share an email and say, you know, help me. Let's work through this together. How might I have worded it differently so that I could get the response that I wanted? And people would support each other. And I guided and facilitated that and sort of talked through the individual sentences that people might have written and did a bit of teaching, a bit of facilitating, a bit of, you know, co-creating with the group. It was just a lot of fun, that kind of group work. And then, of course, there's the other kind of group work where my primary role in every organization I've been at is to facilitate conversations between multiple departments. You know, there's always, you know, you hear about HR, IT, operations working in silos. And so my job was to, you know, facilitate conversations between the multiple stakeholders and to create effective teams rather than silos. So doing that kind of work as well.
I really like that concept of doing that communications workshop, right? Where we get together and we can dissect an actual piece of work product and yet talk constructively about how that could be better. That sounds like really impactful work. I mean, and I assume you did this for communications and probably speaking, public speaking, and all sorts of dimensions of professional development, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the email was just the medium for having this exactly, or just the tool that we used to do that kind of work. But it's all about language. And so absolutely oral communication as well. But think about sort of what's your intention, you know, when you write something, and what's your desired outcome is really the two main questions, right? And how do you clean the language so that it's clean and lands well on the other person with, you know, and taking out some of the emotional, how should I put it? So some of the undertones, right, that you might want to clean out so that it lands well with the recipient.
I do a fair bit of executive coaching, and it's amazing how often in session we're spending our time dissecting an email or a response, you know? And it's like, I know we've got very clear goals to get you to that next step in your career, but okay, today we're going to talk about this one email and how it fell flat or got you, you know, the undesired response. So it's real, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all too often, and unfortunately, we don't get that training, right? And we should really be training kids in elementary high school on language and communication. And so we end up at the workplace without ever having had that training.
Precisely. I think that's a really great point and a really nice segue also into the coaching that you do. And maybe, Annette, you could sort of enlighten our listeners as to the type of coaching that you do and the people that you serve.
Yeah. So I'm particularly passionate about young adults. You know, I work with a range of ages, if it's high school, college, and then early career up through mid-30s frequently. You know, we're all learning. And so I really enjoy working with, I don't want to call them kids because all the way up into their 30s, but where it's a good time to learn, really, right? All of what, you know, we just talked about in terms of communication, how to navigate political challenges in the workplace. And sometimes, you know, it's a complicated quagmire, right? And just, you know, again, we don't have training. We're not training that in high school or in colleges at all, right? I don't think that's addressed for the most part in a university setting. And so facilitating that kind of work with kids early on or young adults early on means that they'll be more successful later and won't reaching these corporate executive levels and then suddenly finding themselves not necessarily fully prepared for it. So the younger we can start the coaching and, you know, the more successful the long-term career will be, I think a lot less stress as well. You know, so sometimes it's just the stress of not being 100% sure how to navigate the situation. So the more we can do early in the career, I think the better the long-term trajectory and mental health, I would say.
Yeah. And I think it unlocks a lot of potential and opens a lot of doors. I mean, you know, we of a certain age, or you get to a certain stage in life, you know, you look back. I can certainly look back and think of very distinct points in my 20s and particularly in my 30s where had I been coached or in the care of a coach or collaborating, working with a coach, I would have played the cards in front of me very differently.
I think about that all the time. Yeah, if only I knew then what I know now. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And you know, it's kind of like a 401k, right? I mean, the sooner you invest in this, the bigger the payoff.
Yeah, and it really trickles down to all situations and relationships in life. Yeah, outside the workplace as well. Yeah,
sure. And as we think about how coaching, promotes, emotional regulation, resilience, and cognitive agility, and all these things that, sort of are the to me always, this is now turning into a coaching conversation. When we coach, we're kind of coaching the person, right? We're also coaching towards an outcome or a goal. But there's all these byproducts that I love that sort of just seem to come out of coaching. And one of them is inevitably self-awareness. The idea that, now we have an ability to sort of look at oneself. Now we have an ability to perhaps separate the, going straight from a stimulus to a reaction. There could be a pause in there. So these kind of things, again, just like I said, the sooner that that awareness is evoked in someone we're working with, the better it's going to serve them over time.
It's my absolute favorite topic. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So Annette, let me ask you, Coach Annette Goodman. So when you decided to become a coach, now you are now a coach in private practice full time. This is what you do. Correct?
This is what I do. Yeah.
This is what she does. She's a pro. Okay. So when you decided to leave sort of profit, nonprofit, corporate, big business world and become a coach full time, did you take your years of experience and turn that into coaching? Did you have to retrain? Did you have to retool? What was that transition like to go from big organization to private practice focused coach?
Yeah, I think both things are true. So absolutely taking all of the prior experience working with individuals, teams, and sort of certainly all the corporate experience. And then I did go for, official certification training for coaching. And I completed one from CLCI, Certified Life Coach Institute. And then now I'm completing a secondary certification at Brown University. So I went up to Providence. They have a hybrid model, which is really neat. So we get to go up there with a cohort and do some of the work hybrid, some of the work in person. Absolutely fantastic program. Highly recommend and learned a lot more. And was excited that there was more to learn because I do love that. So yeah, so a bit of both, I would say, additional certification and all of the prior experience.
And so often that program at Brown just keeps coming up and up again. It's got incredible word of mouth. How did you say you like the program? Do you care to expand on that a little bit? Again, so many of our listeners are considering education options.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is I would say, I did a lot of research before I chose Brown. I really researched the gamut of every single organization. I wanted to see who was teaching it, what their philosophy was, did all of the webinars and got a really good feel for also the cohort. I reached out to a lot of graduates, alumni of all the different programs. And so I really think I chose it carefully before making sort of that investment and commitment of time. And in terms of the program itself, I would say the first thing is that the instructors sort of have this presence about them where you could really feel it. And their style really resonated with me. It was an incredibly present style, and the way they brought the group together, the cohort became, really bonded. And then the material, incredibly well structured, formulated. I thought they did. And I've done a lot of curriculum development. I created Train the Trainer courses over the years, taught, adults professionally, and thought they did a remarkable job, an absolutely A-plus job. In terms of the way they structured the whole material, the content, as well as the, all the pieces. It was incredibly organized as well as a side point. But you could really, it was an immersive experience, I would say. You felt like you were at an immersive retreat almost while you were there. They created an experience and taught the tools in a way that you really walked away with a deep understanding of what's critical in coaching.
Sounds like you really got close to the craft of it.
I felt that way. I really did. I felt, yeah, that you could almost touch it in the way that they delivered the material. Yeah. And of course, they created a lot of practicum experiences, but they've got a sort of a brilliant way of teaching the craft. I would say so. Yeah.
I really appreciate you sharing your firsthand experience with us. Were there other schools that were sort of the close second runners, sort of?
Yeah. I mean, I talked to a lot of different coaches in the field as well, was another way that I sort of investigated what would be the best program. And, you know, I hear IPEC, you know, is an excellent program. There's so many other universities that offer programs. I looked at all the university-based programs. That was really, for me, a front runner. I thought that I would get something more from something that's university-based. And so I looked at, you know, Columbia. The challenge there is, I at the time, at least, they were not necessarily a direct line to ICF. Things may have changed, but I think you have to submit it sort of outside the typical route. And so they may have had a good program, but I decided that, you know, the ICF route was important to me to get the additional ICF certification. And so that's why, it's one of the reasons I chose Brown.
Yeah, that is important. There was in the podcast previous to this, when we talked to a coach, Kevin Hunting, who was an IPEC, attended IPEC, and same thing, so important, was that direct pathway to that ICF ACC credentialing. Critically important. So Annette, can you tell me a little bit about, would you care to clue us in on your coaching style? Sort of, what is your coaching philosophy, and what is it that, you know, how do you, yeah, what's your style like?
Yeah, well, I would say a couple of things. One, I found that I do, you know, sometimes draw on that experience in the corporate world, or, you know, nonprofit as well, where I might say to the client, I'm going to just, you know, or maybe leave it to the end of the session, take off the coaching hat now and just put on a mentor hat. And I might just share, right? So I think it's a hybrid. I might say, you know, coach mentor hybrid, as long as it's super clear in the conversation. I think that's important, if I can share information, especially for people early in their career. If I could share some experience, if I can see that they're struggling with something, I might want to share some information that I have, and of course, for them to take or leave. In the coaching portion itself, I would say, you know, what I keep in mind for myself always is, you know, what's their goal, right? What would be success? What would be a successful session for them? And I'm pretty direct about asking that question. You know, what would you like to get at the end of this session? And a lot of times it's that they want to feel differently about something, or, you know, think differently about something. And I sometimes say, you know, what are the three categories? Is it that you want to feel differently, think differently, or do something different, or make a decision? And so I try to get super clear at the beginning of the session. And I think that helps people just frame what they'd like to accomplish. And so that we both know that it was a successful outcome, or that they got something out of the session, even if it's just a starting point to the next session. But I find that's worked well for me.
So it sounds like you're, by the way, I feel differently, think differently, or do differently. I mean, I wrote that down and circled it and put a big star next to it. So clients of Eric Gorris, look for that in future sessions, that question. So thank you, Annette. It sounds like you're saying that your sessions are pretty client directed.
I would say, you know, the client would be certainly driving the session. Absolutely. I mean, it's their agenda. They're coming in because there's a challenge there. That they want to resolve, you know, as quickly as possible, because it's creating them angst, stress, whatever it is. And I see my role as a de-stressor. That's my job. If they walk away at the end of the session saying, I feel better now, I'm less anxious, less stressed, either because it was a decision or just because of some of the thinking, right? We all have encountered some of this negative, right, self-talk that creates more stress than it needs to. And so I want the client to drive their need, so that they walk away, A, maybe having learned something about themselves, maybe about the brain, about how this works, why it's happening, so that they can then sort of use these tools next time it happens and I'm not there, right? That would be the goal.
Yeah. Using the tools the next time I'm not there. Yeah. Particularly with regard to things like executive poise and negative self-talk, these are sort of places where I find it's very helpful to try and help a client discover a tool that they can put in their pocket to use when they encounter negative self-talk, imposter syndrome, fear of public speaking, these kind of situations. Annette, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned negative self-talk, and you also mentioned the brain, and I want to talk about your incorporation of neuroscience into your practice as well. But right before we go there, Could you, negative self-talk is something that seems to be coming up time and time and time and time again. Do you have an approach that you use or that you fall back on that you could share with us as to how you work with negative self-talk with your clients?
Yeah. I mean, one of the first things that I really like to do is, you know, it's just a 2 minute, right? I wouldn't want to take too much time in a session, but just spend 2 minutes explaining to clients, you know, how the brain works, that negative self-talk is just a habit that we've developed. And, you know, maybe we needed it when we were younger. Maybe it was a survival tool, right, to keep us safe, but it's not serving us anymore. And just if I give them, you know, maybe 60 seconds on neuroplasticity, how we can change our brain, we can change the habit. You know, our brains are not fixed, right? We know this now over the last several decades. There's been so much work on the concept of neuroplasticity, meaning our brains are plastic. And so just understand that you don't have to live this way. And that's what I find most gratifying when at the end of the session, people say to me, I didn't know I could feel differently, right? And so teaching them that it might take some time and some work and some attention, but you can actually have different thoughts and you can create them. And the way to do that, you know, is to create, I talk about a pathway in your brain, right? This pathway is well worn and it's habitual at this point, but you can create a new one. And if you strengthen the new one and use that one over and over again, the old one will fall away. And so I think just to first start by explaining that it's even possible. People don't always know that it's even possible to think in a different way. And then I might talk to them about what tool is going to work for you. You know, there's lots of different ways to start this new path. You know, some of them we're super familiar with, like the self-affirmations. And then the question is, you know, how do you create a daily ritual or practice or habit of using that new tool? Because we need to spend a lot, you know, we took so much time creating this old habitual way of thinking, the negative way of thinking, right? We need to spend a good amount of time using the new tool to create that new pathway so that the old one will kind of be pruned away by your brain.
Wow. So, okay. So it's sort of explain or evoke, I guess, awareness as to how of neuroplasticity, how the brain works, how it falls into patterns. The patterns are like, well-worn roads. We can choose not to drive down them. We can choose to forge new paths through the forest, then reinforce that through repeated use. And do you find that when someone who's battling with negative self-talk, when that is explained to them, it resonates, they understand it, and it's a sort of a light bulb goes off, you think?
I've seen an immediate click. I have, which is why, you know, the first time I tried it, I was like, oh, will this work? will it land, right? How will it land? And I try to keep it to 2 minutes. Can I do this in 2 minutes, right, or less? And it does. I see a light bulb. Oh, okay. You know, I can change this. Or, oh, wow. You know, the other thing I might go to is kind of that, you know, critical voice, that inner critic, right? That you name it and like, oh, you know, that's not the real me, right? That's just a voice that's in there, right? I can be separate from that voice. And so, you know, we look at that as well. And it, you know, over time, you know, a second or third session, we're like, oops, I see that thunder, or I see that whatever that we named that voice, right? People name it all kinds of things, but hey, is that voice again, right? And then suddenly there's an immediate snap. Ooh, okay. I don't want to be listening to that voice. That's not serving me very well.
Yeah, precisely. Time to put in another tape, right? As they used to say. I wrote down in my notes here, it's something for me to reflect upon, is sort of the idea of, you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, almost having a 2 minute like negative self-talk drill sort of in your repertoire where it's like, okay, you know what? That's what I'm sort of getting. I'm sort of seeing, you know, how in my practice, I could even have a, you know, a quick 2 minute sort of diversion where it's like, let's pause on the negative self-talk here and let's take a quick 2 minutes to let me run you through something. Here's 30 seconds of explanation and 30 seconds of experimentation, whatever. It's just an interesting way of sort of encapsulating a tool around a topic that seems to come up time and time again.
Yeah, I found that people really respond to it and then they get creative. What's going to work for them? How do they want to, you know, what tool is going to work for them? How do they want to pull it out? How do they want to incorporate it into their day? And of course, as coaches, we know we hold them accountable, or we ask them if they'd like to be held accountable, right? I usually get a yes. And then sort of the fun conversation the next session is, so how did that tool work for you in the way that we designed it? And do we need to tweak it? Or did it work really well? And so I've seen a lot of, you know, positive results doing that. Yeah.
Hannah, tell me, I'm just so curious about the neuroscience. In what other ways does neuroscience play into your practice or the way you coach?
Yeah, I think, you know, another critical aspect of coaching is, you know, asking a lot of questions, right? It's, you know, we're hoping for thought-provoking questions. And I think part of what's so important about that is if we think about, you know, when we problem solve, right? And we're working out something in our brains and we suddenly have a eureka moment and we come up with a solution. And what happens is there's sort of an endorphin rush there. Aha, you know, there's that aha moment and it's associated with the release of, you know, neurochemicals that are all positive. And that actually drives motivation. And so what's important is as much as possible for clients to come up with the solutions on their own for that reason, because that will drive the motivation, right? You know how we can talk about sort of parents or spouses or friends, you know, giving us ideas and there's sort of almost a natural resistance sometimes initially to ideas. But when a coach can help a client find the answers on their own with just the right questions and the right way of framing things, I think it's way more powerful specifically for that reason. And then, you know, when they have that moment and the adrenaline rush and the motivation is there. And that's when coaches are partnering with them to actually sustain the motivation over time, right? We know that, you know, motivation ebbs and flows, right? But if we're there to, you know, help with the accountability piece, we can sort of hold that excitement and motivation around it and circle back to that as we continue through sessions when they're on a journey or a path.
Thanks for getting into that. Yeah, and you mentioned the parents. Yeah, no one really likes to be told what to do by their parents, but if you could be evoked into it, you know, working with a coach, yeah, then we're talking about someone on, you know, the client who is owning it because it's theirs. They came up with it, you know, thus the power of the question and the coaching.
Yeah, they own it and they're motivated. Yeah, absolutely. It's key. Yeah, there's a reason why we love our own ideas. We're wired that our brains are wired that way.
Yeah, I suppose so. And I can see how it makes sense. And it's just funny, I'm thinking back to my own childhood and how just, you're right, just about everything a parent suggests, you're like, okay, I'll be doing the opposite of that. Thanks. Annette, would you care? You know, we've got a couple more questions here. But before we get into that, do you have any client success stories you would care to inspirational success stories that you would care to share with the listeners?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would say I get most excited. I've had 3 different clients recently who landed their dream job. And to me, that's the best when they text me, I got the job, you know, I'm super excited by that. One of them had been out of the field for a number of years and gone back to work. And she said she was freezing on interviews. She was just so anxious and knew she wasn't doing her best. You know, we talked a lot about all of, you know, her skills and her strengths and got her in touch with them and her past experiences and how she was a right fit for the role and just working through that. It wasn't more than just a handful of sessions, I think. She was there. She just needed to sort of get in touch with it and landed a job that she's super excited about. The follow-up to her particular story is that, you know, we had a couple of sessions after the job started, and she faced a challenge that this was her first remote work position. She had never worked remotely before. And so that meant that she wasn't getting regular feedback from her supervisor. And that actually created a stressor for her, where she wasn't sure if she was doing a good enough job. And so working through that, ways, you know, to really congratulate herself on a job well done. She knew if she had done a good job, right? And so how to get comfortable in a remote work situation where, you know, you self-assess and sort of self-acknowledge your work and then ask for feedback in particular ways. Of course, there's always practical ways that we want to, you know, work with clients to maybe teach them or guide them to work in a remote setting. But she sticks out in my mind because she's doing well in her new remote role. And similarly, I've had 2 other people who got jobs that they were super excited about. And so to me, that's a success.
A huge success. Yeah, of course. I mean, again, life-changing. How old were these clients?
Yeah, a wide range. So actually from upper 20s to mid 40s.
Yeah. It just goes to show, you know, at 20, you can get put on the right path. At 40, you can get, you know, get sort of reoriented to a different path or, you know, tastes change over time, as I always say. And so, you know, yeah, there's opportunities at 40, 50, 30, whatever, to turn around and go a different direction.
You know, it reminds me of probably what started this all, which sometimes I forget, but I'm a first generation college graduate. And I think that may have really and motivated me because I really did not know how to create a career. You know, I got a degree in something I was interested in and took the first job, but really didn't have an acute understanding of all the steps and didn't have guidance and mentorship and didn't really have who to ask. And so I was kind of determined, you know, raising my kids that, you know, that was a focus because that resume building is so important. It, you know, today in the world, there are bots reading our resumes. We have to build them in a particular way, and that matters, and represent ourselves in particular ways. And so I think that's probably partially why I'm particularly, you know, passionate about this field.
Yeah. And thank you for that insight. And thank you for that success story. I do appreciate you modeling the path from self-doubt, freezing in interviews, and, you know, and taking that sort of arc all the way to the other end where now she's in the job and she's thriving at it. And you brought up the remote work environment. And yeah, that's really interesting, you know, how that's coming up a lot in my own work too. And, you know, it's funny, there's structure needed there, isn't there? I mean, people, it hurts to be absent structure, absent that smile from your boss in the elevator, or just these subtle cues that just indicate that you're accepted, you're appreciated, you're welcome here, you're doing a good job. I mean, when Zoom goes away, there's no one just waving hello from across the room.
Yeah, I'm finding that you know, some of the clients are really challenged with that. We need to work a little harder, right, to sort of give ourselves the reinforcement and the feedback that we're doing a good job and start to get comfortable with that, which is a good tool to have in life. And then, of course, you know, there are ways of reaching out and staying in touch, of course, with colleagues and supervisors. But I look at it as an opportunity, right? The challenge is an opportunity.
And I couldn't agree more. I think the entire work from home experiment is nothing but opportunity, opportunities to reinvent and redo and come up with new ways of working. I find it very exciting, although I acknowledge the challenges that many face. Annette, we're sort of wrapping up here. Before we go, just a quick question. So to listeners who are interested in connecting with you or communicating with you, where can they find you online?
It's AnnetteGoodman.com. So AnnetteGoodman.com, spelled the way it sounds, I think, phonetically. And of course, LinkedIn. They can find me on LinkedIn. Certainly the email address is GoodmanLifeCoaching@gmail.com. Variety of different ways they can find me.
That's cool. And Annette is working in private practice right now. Are you currently taking clients, or are you always taking clients? I am. I'm always taking clients.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging to say no, right? You always want to help people. So yeah, I always like to make time and find time, absolutely.
And so if someone's trying to, you know, make sense of a career move or a change in their work environment, reach out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Last question, Annette, before we get to it, I just want to thank you so much for being here today and taking us and the listeners through through your journey to coaching, and then also shining some light into how you do the coaching that you do and the tools that you use. On behalf of the listeners, we're very appreciative of your sharing that information and that knowledge. So thank you. So Annette, tell me, the future of coaching, what do you see when you look in the crystal ball and contemplate the future of coaching?
I can tell you what I'd like to see and hope the crystal ball follows, right? I would say, even starting at the high school level, it would be, you know, if high school students are in internships, I mean, that would probably be the best way, right? So they're getting live experience and then getting coaching alongside that, so that they learn the tools very early on, and then support that through college and early careers. I think that would really set them up for a path of success, so that, you know, by the time they're, you know, in their 30s and 40s, they feel so confident. I think we'd have a much more productive and collaborative workforce as well, right? I think our whole economy would benefit from greater productivity if we learned all of these tools, if students learned all of these tools so much younger. That would be my vote, my personal vote.
Well, I can certainly appreciate that. And my vote too. I'm all for skewing younger. And, you know, like I said, the earlier they're benefiting, the more everyone benefits. Because again, these, you know, to coach someone in their 20s and 30s, you know, that is going to have an impact on their enjoyment in life, but also it's going to have an impact on where their career goes. And oftentimes that's going to mean career success. And that means they're going to be on the hook for inspiring and leading teams and those around them and leading by example. So again, it just sort of speaks to that ripple effect of having people well coached, influencing people around them in a better way and making the world a better place. So yeah, very much thank you for that. Annette Goodman, it has been a pleasure spending the afternoon with you today.
This has been so much fun. My absolute favorite topic, and you're fantastic. So thank you.
Feeling the love. Thank you so much, Annette. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Annette Goodman from Annette. You can get her at AnnetteGoodman.com. And Annette, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
What a great conversation. It's always so educational and inspirational to talk with colleagues and learn from their experiences. That's why it's so important to continue to collaborate with others. And that is one of the best reasons to consider working with a certified coach. Working with a certified coach opens a whole new space to learn, grow, and design your future in a way that you want it. To learn more about what coaching is and how it can help you, please visit our website at icfsouthflorida.org. There you'll find educational resources, our events calendar, and our coaches directory. We hope you'll find exactly what you're looking for, and if you like what you see, consider becoming a member. We would love to welcome you to our community. That's it for now. Thanks again for joining us in the ICF South Florida's Coach's Corner. Until next week, I'm Eric Gorris. Take care and be well.